From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, anyone who has ever had kidney stones knows the trauma and the pain associated, and I was going to say drama too, but it is quite a dramatic thing to have happen. And any of these people would most likely advise to avoid getting them at all costs. But how can you avoid them? Well, there's a new specialist in town who developed a kidney stone center in his previous role in New York State. Dr. Joshua Stern is the new chief of urology at Park City Hospital. He joins us by phone. Welcome, Dr. Stern.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Really nice to have you. How long have you been with Park City Hospital?
It's been a long journey starting in September.
Oh, really new. Wow. So it's curious. I saw a quick video along with your bio page that talks about how you got interested in kidney stones of all things, but give us the story.
Well, I've always had an interest in the kidney. It's really a very unique organ. It filters everything that circulates in our body. And it has the ability to understand what's waste and what's needed. And as a medical student, when I was at Cornell Medical School, I had the opportunity to apply for a grant to study the inner work kidney. And from that moment forth, my interest in the kidney grew, and that led to a specialty in kidney stones.
Well, we certainly are glad to have you in Park City and at the hospital here. Coming from a very, it sounds like a very intense endoscopic kidney stone surgery center to Park City must be, I guess, retirement in a sense, a vacation. There can't be very many people here in Park City who have kidney stones.
I think that the kidney stone rate in Utah is, as with the rest of the country, is growing. Less so in Park City particularly, but in the country and in greater Utah, you know, we do have a diabetes and an obesity epidemic. Both of those have led to significant increases in kidney stones. But if you have 10 people that you know, statistically speaking, one of those people will have had a kidney stone, regardless of where in America you live.
So besides the fun challenge of all of our listeners to find that one person that they know out of the 10 and asking them, I did just a little bit of research, and it seems to be that in high elevation areas, such as ours, there is a higher frequency of kidney stones. Is that correct? What's your thoughts or feedback on that one?
Yeah, I think that in a warm, dry climate, I think that kidney stone risk is going to be increased for sure. And there have been really interesting models looking at temperature increases. And we all think of kind of the Southeast and the South in general as a place where like people get kidney stones, like Florida and Texas. But as temperature change increases, more and more states will join what we call the Stone Belt of America.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Dr. Joshua Stern. He is the new chief of urology at Park City Hospital. We're kicking off this interview by talking about kidney stones, which we are told, well, it's you can do a little research and find out that passing a kidney stone can be as painful as childbirth. And men, you have a greater chance than women, right? 19% in men, while not only 9% in women. Talk about that statistic a bit.
Sure, yeah. We always used to say that, and I agree, historically, we've always said men are at a higher risk of kidney stones than women. But, you know, that race is certainly tightening, and women are catching up, I'm sure, to their chagrin. But it's almost split equally now, the number of men and women that have history of kidney stones.
Oh, interesting. So one of the things, and I know that, you know, living at high elevation and a dry climate, and then oftentimes doing a lot, you know, a lot of people around here are active and doing a lot of recreation and sports, which could lead to dehydration. And that, it appears, is one of the risks of getting kidney stones if you're sort of chronically dehydrated.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. If it's just like when you were a child and you were putting sugar in your Cheerios and you could see the sugar at the bottom of the bowl, if you added enough milk, all of that sugar would dissolve. And it's the same for kidney stones. Kidney stones are often calcium-based, and if there's not enough water to dissolve the calcium, it's going to precipitate as a stone. And so dehydration allows that calcium complex to come out of solution and become a kidney stone. So certainly staying hydrated is one of the best ways to prevent kidney stones.
I can literally hear all of the faucets turning on in Park City in our region just to take another drink of water. And so go ahead.
I was going to add that while water is definitely the best approach, adding orange juice to get the citrate out of orange juice is also very helpful.
Oh, I didn't know that. That was going to be my next question. What three or four or five bits of advice? And it sounds like drink water, drink orange juice, or that also prevents scurvy, which is prevalent amongst many of our residents in the Wasatch Back. What other bits of advice would you give most of our residents?
Right. So the three main things are hydration, and again, water, orange juice. Obviously, if you have diabetes, you have to check in with your doctor about too much orange juice, but things that are high in citrus typically help prevent kidney stones. More fruits and vegetables. And we typically encourage people to have less protein from meat. And the last thing is less salt. And to most people's surprise, the main source of salt in the American diet happens to be bread.
Wow. And bread and other processed foods, the salt that we generally add to our diets is not really the culprit. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the salt shaker on the dining room table is not as much of the culprit, although it can contribute as all of the food that we buy at the market.
So that morning ritual of my children toasting their bread and putting a little butter and salt on there, probably not helping the cause.
I don't want to interrupt morning rituals, though.
We're just happy they eat before school.
Right.
Well, we have generally a pretty healthy population. What are the general patterns that you are seeing here in Park City amongst its residents?
You know, I think that kidney stones hit, you know, many age groups. Unfortunately, kidney stones in children are becoming more and more prevalent in America. And, you know, I think that it's hard to decipher out on first glance whether your stone that you have formed is really just because you were dehydrated or whether that event is uncovering some other metabolic issue that's going on. Because, you know, the stone recurrence rate for most people is about 50% in 3 to 5 years.
Oh, it's similar to the lightning frequency for those who've been previously struck. What underlying conditions that you kind of hinted at for someone who might have reoccurring kidney stones might one want to further investigate with their general practitioner?
Well, again, if you have diabetes or if you are overweight, those two things are major risk factors for kidney stones. But then there are other metabolic things that can affect the kidney. And those can be uncovered with something that we do, which is called a 24-hour urine collection. And that urine collection can look at all sorts of kidney stone risk factors in the urine.
I'm told that we may be passing very tiny kidney stones that may be no bigger than a grain of sand. So not knowing that we have sort of a predisposition to grow kidney stones, does the average person do this and just unwittingly or unknowingly, or is it only the person who is then going to develop larger kidney stones that are going to be so painful to pass?
Yeah, I don't suspect that most of us are passing tiny kidney stones on a very frequent basis. I think those of us who have had them will most likely know about it. So it's not something you have to go looking for typically. It will find you.
What is the largest, how big is the largest kidney stone that's ever been passed? You know, we're talking world record here. Guinness Book of World Records.
Hopefully in a museum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can pass kidney stones that are about 1 centimeter. That would be somewhat heroic. Bigger than that is pretty tough to pass. But we've taken kidney stones out that go up to 8 centimeters.
Wow. And this is what you're operating on endoscopically. Can you talk a little bit more about that technology?
Sure. So, you know, the access to the kidney is either through the back. Your kidney from your back is typically only a couple inches away. So we have different tools that can help us access the kidney that way. We do that when people have some bigger stones. Mm-hmm. And then otherwise we have very small, very high-tech, flexible instruments that can travel up the tube that connects the kidney to the bladder. And with high-definition visualization, we're able to use lasers and really fancy baskets that can help break up stones that are too big to pass, and then we can remove all of the fragments.
And I apologize. The child in me is kind of visualizing, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and they've got like little cannons that they're shooting these kidney stones with. That process, I know endoscopy is pretty simple, but what happens then with those 8 centimeter kidney stones? I mean, does the body just flush them out once they're smaller, or do you actually remove them?
So that's a good question. And your analogy with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is funny because my son, who is now 8, I think probably 2 years ago, when he was asking me about kidney stones, and he says, I don't understand. You're so big. How do you actually climb inside a kidney to take them out?
There you go. I'm right on. Thanks.
So to get those larger stones, we can use an instrument that actually has a jackhammer, which is actually an electromagnetic jackhammer. So it doesn't actually have something like you see them use on the streets. So it sends electromagnetic waves to break the stone. It also has ultrasonic waves that we send to break up the stones. But then the cool part is it also has a suction device at the same time. So as the stones are being broken, they get sucked into the instrument and out into our closed system tubing so we can collect all of the stones that way.
That is amazing. And for that process, will someone, you said a lot of your patients will have a higher frequency of having those kidney stones. Is that something that person will have to come back again?
We do our best to try to prevent kidney stones after folks have one with dietary changes, with lifestyle changes. and then sometimes with medication. Mm. But again, that all depends on kind of everybody's individual metabolic profile.
Well, Dr. Stern, we're really lucky to have you here at Park City Hospital. Even though your passion is the kidney, and we've talked a lot about kidney stones, you are, as a urologist, someone who deals with all kinds of cancers, with bladder, prostate, kidney cancer, prostate enlargement. Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of what you do primarily at Park City Hospital?
Sure. You know, I work very closely with Carol Leatherman, who's a PA that's been at Park City Hospital for a number of years. And together we try to take care of the breadth of urologic issues. We also have partners down in Salt Lake. If somebody, I really specialize in kidney stones. So if somebody comes to me with something that somebody down in Salt Lake specializes in, I think that patients would be in better hands there, I would certainly encourage that as well. But we're going to try to take care of the large breadth of urologic problems up in Park City.
So it seems like more and more we're getting specialists at Park City Hospital, people who, as you say, people might maybe coming up from the valley to see you because you're the expert on kidney stones. And it seems as though more and more we're able to stay here in Park City for our treatment for whatever it may be. But for something like, you know, we know that if you're a male and you're over, I don't know, about 50, chances are, or maybe you can tell me what the chances are, of having an enlarged prostate. And is that always something that you're going to deal with first here at Park City Hospital?
Yeah, so, it's called BPH, which is, benign growth of the prostate, is the most common diagnosis among men. And, we can take care of that for sure at Park City Hospital. And we've got a number of different treatment, medication, or surgical interventions that can help men that have difficulty urinating improve that situation.
Interesting. And as we kind of wrap our time up here, Doctor, what bits and nuggets? Oh, that's probably not the best word, nuggets.
you are talking to a urologist.
That's correct. That's why I backtracked a little bit. What bits of advice would you give all of us as we wrap up?
I think keeping up with your active lifestyle, staying hydrated. And what I tell everybody that comes in with a kidney stone is, especially if you're younger and you have a kidney stone, the silver lining is that the diet that we recommend folks that have kidney stones is very similar to the diet that your cardiologist, when you're in your 60s or 70s, is recommending you to be on. So if you can switch to that diet today, you may actually be living a more heart-healthy life as well.
It's interesting, Dr. Stern. I have a challenge, I guess, with making myself drink enough water all the time. And I try to have this visualization of my cells sort of puffing up with all that hydration. But now I have a new visual that you have gifted me this morning. When I think of a kidney stone, that's really going to be the inspiration I need. So thank you for that. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that one of the great things about getting new doctors, and as you say, you came here in September, is that your schedule isn't typically really full in those beginning months. So what a great time to come and visit the new chief of urology at Park City Hospital. Or am I mistaken? Are you already booked up?
No, we're even if we were booked up, we're happy to see you.
Okay, good to know. And then also, do you, this may be incorrect to think this, but it seems like male doctors that are urologists tend to deal with prostate issues and men, and then female doctors who are urologists tend to deal with, incontinence issues with women. How correct is that? And you know, you mentioned that you have the physician's assistant along with you, who is a female, and so does she deal with, you know, the female issues?
You know, I think that that's historically that was accurate. I think that urologists in general are trying to break down those barriers. And I certainly trained with two men that were experts in female urinary incontinence. But there are certainly women that take care of female urinary incontinence as well. But I think the goal is obviously to, you know, have women and men take care of similar things. Yeah. And I'll say to all of the men and women patients out there, it really shouldn't matter whether your physician is a man or a woman, but you just want to find the right doctor that you're comfortable with.
Dr. Joshua Stern, the new chief of urology at Park City Hospital, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life. It's been great speaking with you.
My pleasure. Nice talking.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.